Shalom v'shuchat, v'ramos, v'rodech, v'shari, asidhara, sedushi, shreman, his divine grace, shalasi, bhakti, vedanta, soira, shalom, v'rohat, kijai, kor, premanande, you all glorious to the sound devotees, all glorious to Shiguro, Shiguranga. Mahu Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Krishna Vidaya Mimati Bhakti Vidaya Swamiji Namne Namaste Saraswati Deva Gaur Vani Vikarne Nirvishe Shavishnu Vali Pajitak Vyadhi Om Agyana Tavananda Sya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobisham Stapitam Nenda Bhukale Svayam Rupa Padamayam Vidati Swapadanti Kam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagurdatam Sahadar Vaganatam Vitamitam Sarivam Sarvaitam Sabadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchen Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prashubhana Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyastra Kripa Sindhubhyavacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Thank you all for coming. My name is Pralayananda Swami. I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter. Read from chapter 15. Text number 8. Shriram Yad Avapnoti. So page here in this book is 722. Chapter 15. Yoga, the Supreme Person, text number 8. Shriram Yad Avapnoti.
Shriram Yad Avapnoti.
Yatscha Yukramati Shraha.
Yatscha Yukramati Shraha.
Prahit Vaitani Samyati.
Prahit Vaitani Samyati.
Vayor Gandam Ivashayat.
Vayor Gandam Ivashayat.
Shriram Yad Avapnoti.
Shriram Yad Avapnoti.
Yatscha Yukramati Shraha.
Yatscha Yukramati Shraha.
Krihit Vaitani Samyati.
Krihit Vaitani Samyati.
Vayor Gandam Ivashayat.
Vayor Gandam Ivashayat.
So let's repeat.
Shriram Yata Bhavnoti.
Shriram Yata Bhavnoti.
Yatchapyut. Ramati Shara.
Yatchapyu Ramati Shara.
Vaitani Samyati.
Vaitani Samyati.
Vayurandham Ivashaya.
Vayurandham Ivashaya.
Shariram Yadvapnoti.
Shariram Yadvapnoti.
Yatchapyu Ramati Shara.
Yatchapyu Ramati Shara.
गृहत्वैतानि संयाति
गृहत्वैतानि संयाति
वायुर्गन्धानि वाशयात्
वायुर्गन्धानि वाशयात्
शरीरं यद् वाप्नोति
शरीरं यद् वाप्नोति
यच्चाप्युत्क्रामति
स्वर यच्चाप्युत्क्रामति स्वर
गृहत्वैतानि संयाति
गृहत्वैतानि संयाति
वायुर्गन्धानि वाशयात्
वायुर्गन्धानि वाशयात्
शरीरं
यत् वाप्नोति
यश्चापि उत्
शरीरं यत् वाप्नोति यच्चाप्युत्क्रामति ईश्वरः गृहीत्वैतानि संयाति
Ishvarah,
the Lord of the body, Grihitva,
taking,
Etani,
all these,
Samyati,
goes away.
Vayu,
the air,
Gandhan,
smells,
Eva,
like.
Ashayat,
from their source.
Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The living entity in the material world carries its different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Prabhupada's purport. Here the living entity is described as Ishvara, the controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade, and if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. At the time of death, the consciousness he has created will carry him on to the next type of body. If he has made his consciousness like that of a cat or a dog, he is sure to change to a cat's or dog's body. And if he has fixed his consciousness on godly qualities, he will have changed into the form of a demigod. And if he is in Krishna consciousness, he will be transferred to Krishna Loka within the spiritual world and will associate with Krishna. It is a false claim that after the annihilation of this body, everything is finished. The individual soul is transmigrating from one body to another, and his present body, present activities, are the background of his next body. One gets a different body according to karma, and he has to quit this body in due course. It is stated here that the subtle body which carries the conception of the next body develops another body in the next life. This process of transmigrating from one body to another and struggling along the body is called karshati, or a struggle for existence. So the text again. Shariram yadavapnoti yatschapyu kremati shraha prahit vaitani samyati vayurgandam ivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Vidaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vacharana Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyaya Desitarna. This is one of the major topics in Bhagavad Gita, the transmigration of the soul. Sometimes people think that this is a Hindu philosophy. Srila Prabhupada was once giving a lecture at the University of South Africa in Durban, and one of the other speakers complained when Prabhupada was talking about transmigration. He said that, why are you talking about this Hindu dogma? Prabhupada said, it's not a Hindu dogma, it's a science. He said, and he explains it's a science because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Denasminita dehe komaram yovanam jara tathadahantara prapthir yuryas tatran muyati, that we have a body that's changing. So it's not that 5,000 years ago, when Krishna was speaking to Arjuna, he told Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, today I'm speaking to you this philosophy because I'm a Hindu god. And therefore I'm speaking to you because you're a Hindu. And now we're going to talk about Hindu philosophy. So according to Hindu philosophy, everyone has a body that's changing. Or at least Hindus have bodies that change. Hindus go from boyhood to youth to old age, and then Hindus have to leave their body. That's called death. But luckily, because you're a Hindu, you'll get another body. No, the fact is that whatever our designations are, male or female, black or white, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, atheist, plant, animal, everyone has a body that's changing. And within everyone's body, there's a living personality, conscious person, who's not changing. Therefore, only under the spell of ignorance do we identify ourselves with this body and we think that we're changing. But actually, we're eternal. We're eternal because in spite of whatever changes the body goes through, we don't change at all. Of course, we don't know who we are, so that's the problem. Because we're thinking on the body, therefore we're not actually aware of our actual personality. We're just like a person who's anathematized. That they're not aware of actually what's going on. They're more or less in a dream state. So here it mentions that we, the soul within the body, that we're completely unaffected by the body. Just like air is always neutral. Sometimes when the air is in contact with roses, then it smells very sweet. And similarly, when air is in contact with garbage, it smells very foul. So according to the association with the modes of material nature, sometimes the soul appears to be good, sometimes the soul appears to be bad, and sometimes the soul appears to be in between. But this is not the soul. When we see the activities of the body, it's not actually the activities of the soul, it's the activity of the modes of nature. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani guna karmani sarvashaha ahankare vimudatma karataham iti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes, thinks himself to be the doer of the activities, which are in actuality carried out by the modes. So factually speaking, whether we witness our own activities or the activities of others, we're not really seeing the soul at all. Simply we're seeing the results of the soul's desires. And the soul itself, we ourselves, we're not the doer of the activity. These activities are actually carried out by the modes of nature under directions of the Supreme Lord. But because we have the capacity to desire, therefore we become entangled in different bodies due to our desires. Purusha prakriti stohi bhumte prakriti janganan karna guna sangosya sar asad yoni junmasu. The living entities in this material world that follow the ways of life enjoying the three modes. This is due to their association with those modes, and thus they meet with both good and evil amongst the various species. So in other words, by association, we acquire certain modes. Just like, for instance, here we're listening to Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is transcendental sound vibration, and by listening to Bhagavad Gita, we'll undoubtedly acquire some kind of material, spiritual knowledge. But that's not exactly true if you go somewhere else. If you go to the store or to the restaurant, if you go to the movies or to the bar or anywhere else, we'll hear the glories of something other than Krishna or devotional service. We'll hear the glories of smoking this or drinking that, doing this particular sport or game. And by hearing the glories of something, we naturally, because our tendency is we want to be happy, we become interested in perhaps experiencing what's being described as happy or pleasing ourselves. Therefore, our desires naturally orientate themselves towards wanting to experience that particular type of happiness or pleasure. And since Krishna is sitting in our heart as the Super Soul, he senses our desire just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So similarly, Krishna, according to our desires and what we deserve, he makes arrangements. Of course, we may desire something, but we may not deserve it. For instance, I may desire to fly around in this room right now, but because I don't have a particular body which is made for flying around in the room, I won't be able to do it. On the other hand, if I desire to fly somewhere and I have the money, then Krishna can arrange it, that I can fly there. And I may have the capacity, for instance, I may have the capacity to go to the movies, but I may not desire. Life, therefore, is a combination of what we deserve and what we desire. But in any case, we should understand that what we desire will have that's the deciding influence on what is our future. As mentioned here, Anta kale chamameva smaran muktva kale ram yat priyati samadvamam yati nas yatra samshayaha. That whoever quits his body at the time of death, remembering me, attains me without any doubt. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajan dhyanta kale ram tam tam evaiti kunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. That whatever one remembers at the time of leaving the body, will attain to that state without any fail. In other words, just as we're getting the reactions to our present activities in the form of so many different bodies we're going through, because it's not one body that we're experiencing, it's just like a motion picture. The motion picture appears to be one continuous activity, but actually it's many different frames simply going quick enough so we don't see the it appears to us to be continuous. We don't see the separate frames. So in the same way the material world is simply separate experiences, separate manifestations of the material nature going on so quickly that it appears to be continuous. Therefore, according to what we desire, then in the future we'll get a reaction, just like bees. They go out and they get different pollen. They come back to their beehive and they utilize that pollen and they form honey from it. So that honey, although it seems to have a uniform taste, but actually is comprised of so many different types of pollen. Similarly, our different desires are condensed together in the form of karma, of which we have to face a reaction for in the future. And when we're experiencing that reaction, our reaction to the reaction will determine what kind of reaction we'll get in the future. Therefore, knowing that one is aloof from the material nature, transcendental, therefore one should not desire to engage oneself in material activities. Material activities means that under the circumstance, I'm always planning how to have a better future. And I'm always worried about the reactions from my past that perhaps I'll have to suffer in the future. So we hanker for a good future, and we're always in anxiety that perhaps my future won't be as good as I wanted it to be. So one should neither desire to enjoy material energy, nor desire to get out of material energy. Or as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in different places, aprakasham pravritischa pramado moha eva cha. Aprakasham pravritischa moham eva cha pandava sandvaishti sampuritani ninirritani kankshati udasinadvarasi no gunayo navichalyate guna varatante ityevam yo patishti nengate samaduka sukhasvasta samalostrasmakam shinaha tulya priya priya dhiras tulya mitrari pakshayo tata mana pamaniyo tulyas tulya mitrari tulya nandan mitrari pakshayo sarvaram bhakrityagi gunakti taksa uchite. One who does not desire illumination nor delusion nor attachment when they occur, nor longs for them when they're absent, remains aloof, knowing that the modes alone are active, and that one is different from them, aloof from them. Who looks alike a pebble, stone, piece of gold, friends and enemies, honor, dishonor, is said to have already transcended the modes of material nature. In other words, now we're in the material body, but we're completely different from the material body. Only to our attachment to the material body. Because our service attitude is directed towards the material body. Now, instead of worshipping Krishna, we've gotten a material body and we're worshipping this body. We get up in the morning and we immediately start meditating on our service to the body, to the deity. How many times we're going to give it abhishek that day, how many offerings to make it. We look at it in the mirror and we start worshipping it, offering arti within our mind. We start thinking about how we're going to glorify the body and how to get others to glorify it. So, the soul is now worshipping a deity called the dead material body. And because we're attached to the material body, therefore we're going to be offered another deity in the future after this one runs out. Is constantly being restored. And it's only due to our service attitude towards this body. But instead of either desiring to get out of the body or trying to serve the body, if one utilizes the same body but utilizes it in Krishna's service, then one at once becomes aloof from the activities of the body. Sarva manasi, sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukhambasi naiva dware pare dehi naiva korvanakarya. When the embodied soul mentally renounces all activities, sarva karmini manasa sanyasyaste sukhambasi, then he lives happily in the city of the nine gates of the material body, neither working nor desiring, neither desiring anything nor working or desiring anything. So when we see things properly, that we're not the body, nor are we ever going to become a body, any material body, but if we desire to utilize the body in Krishna's service, then we'll become free from the bodily concept of life and be able to enter into our actual life, a spiritual life. And if we don't utilize this body in Krishna's service, whether we're tempting towards liberation or material enjoyment or simply suffering, then simply the result will be, as a reaction to our whatever the karma that we've acquired, we'll get another body to do the same thing over and over again. Puna punas charvata charvanana. So one has to become convinced that there's no past, present, and future in the material world. There's simply the same thing happening again and again. In the past, people are eating, they were sleeping, they were mating and defending, And now people are simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And in five lifetimes from Brahma, or a million lifetimes from Brahma, people are going to be eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Punat, punas, charvana, charvana, na. Perhaps the clothes they're wearing are slightly different. And when they go to sleep, maybe the bed looks a little bit different. But the activity is exactly the same. So there's no progress in this material world. It's simply doing the same thing over and over again. But due to the Maya's influence, one is thinking that everything is new, that this is going to be the first time. But it's the same thing over and over again. In the spiritual world, everything is nitya nava nava navyamana. It's always fresh and new. But here, everything is the same. It just takes a little while to figure out that it's the same thing again and again. In any case, the change is sometimes we're in ignorance, sometimes in passion, sometimes we're in goodness. But whether one is in goodness, passion, or ignorance, one is basically doing the same thing. But they're doing it in a good way, or in a passionate way, or in an ignorant way. So the aim of life is not simply to eat, sleep, mate, and defend in the mode of goodness. Because if we have to eat, sleep, mate, and defend in the mode of goodness, we still have to suffer. Anyone who's in the material world, anyone who has a material body, even Lord Brahma, has to suffer. We may think, well, it's worthwhile suffering because I have such a nice body. It's worthwhile to go through the sufferings. So that's just due to our attachment. That's just a symptom of our loving propensity, that we can become attached to something which is as miserable as our present material body. So what to speak of if we become aware of the Supreme Person who is full of bliss and gives us unlimited happiness? How much more will develop a service attitude towards Him? How much more will become attached to Him rather than a body which simply causes us suffering and keeps us in ignorance, in fear of death? So here it says that we're already carrying our different conceptions of life, just like air is carrying aroma. But by the chanting of Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, we can become purified of this conception gradually by learning how to chant properly. Properly means to actually mean what we're saying, to direct our chanting towards Krishna, and to actually mean that we want to engage in His loving service. And to chant in such a way is that we're actually trying to chant with some loving feelings, with attention to Krishna, and with some happiness, some love. Then Krishna, when He sees that we're aloof from material consciousness, because material consciousness means suffering. Whether hankering for Krishna to give us something, means we're simply under the modes. Or lamenting the fact that we didn't get what we wanted. So this type of hankering lamentation is not very valuable for pure devotional service. So if you simply chant with attention and hear with attention, then the result is that, and we chant to Krishna, then we'll become conscious of Krishna. And instead of being conscious of this body, we become conscious of Krishna. Then we can see what is the difference between awareness of Krishna and awareness of the material body. We have to become aware of something. So if we're not aware of Krishna, then we have to become aware of some material body. But if we become aware of Krishna, then automatically our misidentification with this body will gradually cease, and gradually we'll become aware of who we actually are, that our actual spiritual identity is in relation to Krishna. But if we don't want that, then we'll have to change our bodies again and again. And most people, out of ignorance, they have no idea what is the value of this human form of life. They think it's just like some other like any other species of life, that we should simply eat and sleep, mate, and defend. The Prabhupada was giving a lecture at one university in Boston, and he was explaining that if you act like a dog, you'll become a dog, and if you act like a cat, you'll become a cat. So one student raised her hand and said, Swamiji, You said that if I act like a dog, I'm going to have to become a dog. But I just want you to know, I don't mind if I become a dog, that I want to become a dog. So Srila Prabhupada raised his hand and said, you have my blessings. So Krishna, if one wants to become a dog, then he gives one that ability. Because after all, to be a human being is quite inconvenient, especially in Kali Yuga. You just eat, sleep, maintain, defend, it takes so much endeavor. You have to go to school, get your engineering degree in computer science. After so many years, worry about getting a job so you can get enough money so you can go to the grocery store and get something to eat. So much worrying they can't even sleep. So the dog has no such problem. He simply goes outside. The food is free. He doesn't have to work for it. He doesn't have to get a college education to get it. And as far as sleeping, he can sleep anywhere. There's no problem. There's no insomnia amongst the dogs. He doesn't have to take sleeping pills. He can sleep anywhere. And mating, he doesn't have to sign a marriage contract. And when there's separation, worry about what's going to happen to the kids. There's no, he simply mates whenever he gets inspired to do so. And he doesn't have to pay alimony even if he doesn't get along with his wife and children. And defending, he doesn't have to take 5 years of karate to defend himself. No, he automatically learns. It takes him a few lessons and he knows exactly what to do. Simple life. Free from, practically, relatively speaking, free from anxiety. For human beings, to sleep, eat, sleep, mate, and defend is such an endeavor. Better to become a dog. Less problems. Or a hog. Hog never has indigestion. Can eat as much as it wants, anytime, anywhere, anything. It never has indigestion. Gets real fat, but no one ever tells a hog to go on a diet. And as far as mating or sleeping, you can sleep anywhere, anytime. And mating, he has no Freudian psychology. He just mates with anything and everyone, anytime. And defends in his own way. So if one really wants to get into material existence, as my society is trying to do, then they should follow the footsteps of the hog acharya and come to the spontaneous platform of sense gratification, which is more or less the goal of modern society, to follow the footsteps of hog, singer, Mr. Hog. Mahatma Hog. And that's what more or less people are heading for. But human life is not meant for unrestricted sense gratification. It's actually meant to regulate our sense gratification so eventually we can get free from it. Tasma tvam indiyanyam do niyamyabhavatar shabha patmanam prajihiyenam jnana vijnana nashna. Therefore Arjuna, in the very beginning, curbed this great symbol of sin lust by regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. By regulating the senses, how much we eat, how much we sleep, how we defend or mate, but these things, if they're regulated, then gradually we become free from them by giving us an opportunity to focus on Krishna. Evam buddhe puram buddhva samsabhyatmanam atmana tihi shatru mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental, the material senses, mind and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So knowing oneself, we actually know that we're transcendental. Then, no matter what desires are flowing through our minds, we'll choose those desires that will actually help us progress in spiritual life. Material nature or the spiritual nature will offer us different varieties of opportunities. Krishna says, Sadatam kirtayantam mam idhantastra dridavritaha namasintasyamam bhaktya nitya uta upasadhe. So when the inspiration for kirtan, the hearing about Krishna, for serving Krishna, this is coming from the internal energy. And everything else is coming from the external energy. Therefore, if we choose those activities which will help us progress in spiritual life, if we desire to fulfill those desires, then Krishna will help and enlighten us and enliven us so that we make progress towards becoming more and more absorbed in those similar type of activities. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Atmanivedanam, Bandhanam, Atmanivedanam. So we can try out these activities, perform them, gradually we'll become aware of ourselves as spiritual beings. We won't be so much elated or depressed over our present material circumstances, nor will we desire future material circumstances. We'll simply remain aloof from the activities of the material energy and go on with our spiritual activities unobstructed. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Sometimes we have like desires and we know that those are materialistic desires. Like, I'm talking about myself. I know it. And it is not for me. Like, suppose it's for my child, that I want something for him. Then what do we do? How do we get rid of that? Or?
Oh, it depends what it is. If it's something that's worthwhile, it can be utilized in Krishna's service, then we can utilize in Krishna's service. If you want to buy your child, 3 kilos of cocaine, and you just have this desire, and well, then you might have to pray to Krishna and get rid of such an unlawful desire. But if it's something worthwhile, I really want my child to eat today, but I know it's a material desire, so how can I conquer over? No, it's not necessary to conquer over such a desire. But we should offer the food to Krishna, that's all.
If I desire his happiness, then...
Then you should teach... How old is he?
4.
4. Give him some prasad, give him to chant Hare Krishna. Talk about, read Krishna book to him. It's the only way you can become happy. There's no other happiness except for Krishna consciousness. So if you're convinced that there's no happiness except for Krishna consciousness, then you'll give him Krishna consciousness. Nachi buddhi yuktasya, nachi yuktasya bhavanaha, one who is not in spiritual or divine consciousness, transcendental consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So unless someone's enlightened that they're not their body, by utilizing their senses in Krishna service, then how can they be peaceful? And if they're not peaceful, well, is there any question of happiness? So unless you can educate your child so eventually he realizes that he's a spiritual personality, has a spiritual relation with Krishna, then there is no question of peacefulness. And if there's no peacefulness, how is there any happiness? So you may give him $1 trillion, but if he identifies with the body, he'll always be in anxiety. So the greatest gift you can give is pure devotional service and Krishna consciousness. Isn't that right, Pierre?
That's what I was going to say.
Take the words right out of your mouth. Is that right? Anything else?
But if wishing for something, is it not in a way wishing for myself because he's...
Yeah, of course, we're always selfish. In this material world, we don't do anything unless it's related to... Not us, we don't know who we are. we're thinking we're this body or the mind. And the mind always comes up with something in relation to the mind. We don't know anything outside of our minds. Even if we sacrifice the body for some material cause, still it's always the idea that someone's going to come to our grave and cry over it, and we'll feel satisfied that I was a good person. So, yes, we're always selfishly interested. We think it's our, but we, now we think our self-interest is this body or the subtle mind. But actually our real self-interest is Krishna. Yes?
But don't we have to go through all of these things to come to that realization, though?
I hope not. All of what things?
I mean that we're, even before I can even, certainly I'm devoted to Krishna, but if I'm not able to understand that going through myself,
through who's yourself? Being,
experiencing this moving through the different levels of consciousness.
Well,
then what's the purpose of doing, well, and I'm just talking from a human level,
yes.
Going from the bottom on up, if that's what we're talking about. I have to first experience these things, and
as you say,
chant Krishna's name and get the, as Prabhupada would say, the mellows.
Where does it say that? Have you read Bhagavad Gita?
I've read Bhagavad Gita, and
where does it say that in Bhagavad Gita?
I can't quote the Bhagavad Gita because I've not studied the Bhagavad Gita as you have.
Okay.
But we're not.
This is not a contest, but...
No, I'm not saying it is.
But you made a statement that you have to go through all the different material experiences.
Well, not the material experience, but even devoting oneself to God. And you talk about chanting Krishna, and certainly, but before you can even understand what you're talking about, one has to first begin and have to see some changes within oneself.
Yeah, of course.
So one has to go through one's experience.
Yeah, of course.
And I think in this movement we deny the experiences of being human and of making mistakes and certainly if one's following the teachings and if one believes in the teaching and in the teacher, then that will come. But it takes time.
No, we don't deny that. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Ye me matam idam nityam anatishti me matam sarva. Ye me matam idam nityam anatishti manava shadavanta nasiyanto mutante te bikaravi. This is Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, text number 31. You have the Bhagavad Gita there, you can look it up. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport, the translation is, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully with that envy become free from the bondage of fruitive activities. Prabhupada writes in the purport. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the laws of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So there it allows for mistakes. It even says we're not going to be able to do everything perfectly or fully in the beginning. But if we try sincerely, then gradually Krishna will help us and we'll be able to do things better and more consistently. But it takes time and patience, and we have to follow the process, and then gradually we'll get better.
But despite the fact we're all sitting here and we're all talking, everyone has to experience that within him or herself.
Experience what?
The truth, whatever the truth is, the truth.
What do you think the truth is?
Well, I'm no one to speak to even converse with you on the Bhagavad Gita or even the truth, but from my own personal experience, that's all I can rely on.
Rely on what?
Okay. We're not going to go there. No, and you know, and certainly we can talk forever on this. You know,
on what?
We can have debates and one up one another. But it's not even that. It's each. You're sitting there. You're talking to me about the Bhagavad Gita, and I'm hearing you, right. And I'm listening to it from my own experience in my own life, in my own world. Whatever it is, yeah. Up to this point, brought me here.
But again, our basic principle, not our, but Bhagavad Gita's basic principle, is that we're a spiritual soul. So we're all surrounded by different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, but it doesn't stop ourselves from being a soul. And that besides the soul, there's a supreme soul. So somehow or another, we have to come in contact with the supreme soul in spite of whatever is going on within us or without us. That's all.
Well, in the daily struggles of each person, or struggle or not struggle, or pains, or whatever one is experiencing in the world, one has to go through that. One is at work, one's going through the stress,
obviously,
working with others. One has to go through
that. Yeah, of course. We can't change it because we're not the controllers.
Right, right.
We're getting the results of our karma.
Right, right. But then we're attempting to, in our practice, bring the energy up so we can deal with these things in a more...
Constructive way,
and to elevate ourselves in some ways.
That's right.
So I mean, that's all we can do, and through each.
Well, when you can create a universe or two, let me know.
Well, we're not talking about creating a universe. We're attempting to come to this place of devotion.
Right. We can't do it. We're servants, as Prabhupada says. Right. We're servants of the circumstances.
Right. Right.
So we're just trying to use the best, we do the best we can under the circumstances, become Krishna conscious.
Right.
And not much more we can do.
why do we start becoming more Krishna conscious when bad things happen to us?
Because that's why we approach Krishna. Krishna says there are four kinds of pious persons who approach me. The first one is called the artha, or the one who's in distress. Because distress is out of ignorance. So if we're in ignorance, we don't really know anything really positive. All we know is our ignorance, and our ignorance is distressful. Therefore, out of ignorance, in ignorance, we approach Krishna to help us. And then we find out that the reason why we're in distress is because we don't follow the regular principles of life. Especially the four of the principles. And we don't regulate our lives, that causes distress. And then we start become regulated in our lifetime, and our lifestyle, we get free from distress, and then our motivation to approach Krishna is different. Then there's something else we find out we feel lacking. Namely, we don't feel secure. And then we go to Krishna for security. And then after our securities, we feel a little more secure. Then there's another motivation we discover. Namely, we want to control others for one reason or another. We want to learn how to influence others. Then once we learn how to influence others, then we realize it doesn't really matter whether I feel secure, or I'm free from distress, or I'm influencing others. Still, I'm not happy here. Therefore, we want to get out of here. We want to go someplace else. Liberation. So according to the modes of nature, if we're in ignorance, then generally security and distress are big factors. Ignorance and passion. When we're in passion, then we want to control others so we can enjoy. And when we're in goodness, we want to get out of here. So according to the modes that we acquired, we approach Krishna for different reasons. But generally, most people are approaching Krishna out of distress or a desire for security.
But if I pray to Krishna to get rid of that particular thing, is that bad or is that okay?
You mean that particular motivation?
Yes, if I'm distressed for some reason and I pray...
No, that's all right. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi pivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. Whether one is full of desire, has no desire, desires liberation, one should engage with great determination Krishna's service. It's not the highest motivation, but it's a normal, natural motivation under the modes of nature. And Krishna will reciprocate. And we will become elevated, and then our distress will end. But then we should go on with our devotional service. Otherwise, we'll wind up in distress again. Yes.
Now, you mentioned how distress was more from the mode of ignorance.
Yes.
So why is it that Queen Kunti prayed for this distress so that she can think of Krishna again and again?
I thought it's easy to think.
What's that? Why? She was enjoying her distress. She wasn't praying for distress.
Well, then calamities fall.
Calamities, that's different from distress.
Well, calamities. I
didn't make the distinction.
Well, distress is an internal experience. In other words.
Oh, I see. So the calamities are just external, but it doesn't really.
Well, for them, as soon as they were in the midst of a calamity, they absorbed their consciousness in Krishna. Therefore, there was no material distress for them because they were transcendental. That's what they're praying for. Not put me in anxiety and let me suffer again and again. No, they were praying that they would be put into a position where they'd always remember Krishna.
And I think it's easy to you have calamities, to go into a transcendental mode.
Well, we don't have to pray for them in this age. They just happen spontaneously one after the other. The very thing that Queen Kunti was hankering for, we were getting for free.
Suddenly makes it easy.
Yes, we're so fortunate.
I think so, one way. So.
Yes.
So you started with this, that we are the soul and then the super soul, Krishna is there, right?
We are the soul, by
the way. We are the soul and Krishna is super soul, within every soul is there. And our life is between the desire and what we deserve. So, and just a very basic question, not that high-five question.
I'll give you a basic answer.
So why, like I know there's a desire, material desire is there. And yeah. I know, and I don't want it, still the desire is there. And how come the super soul allows it to happen? Like, as you said that you can fly, you can desire to fly. That is not letting it happen. But the other desire, which I know there is a bad desire, but I have the desire, and that he lets me have, that desire.
You don't have it. The desire is appearing, and then we're dovetailing our desire with the desire. It's not that simply whatever desire appears within my mind is the divine, and therefore I should try to satisfy it. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadva tadva kama yam pravishanti sarve se shantimat noti na kama kami. Person is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled and is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy desires, such desires. So these desires will arise, but if we're factually absorbed in thinking about Krishna, then we won't take them so seriously.
But still, somehow, I'm talking about like, you know, sensual gratification. That's one example. Right? I know that, okay, this is one thing which I should not be looking for, but the desire is there, bodily need or anything like that. So how come super soul allows those things to happen? Like,
why not?
Because he doesn't let you fly.
Well, he wants to fly. How do you know he doesn't let you fly?
You said he doesn't want to fly.
I have a platinum card with American Airlines.
I
fly all the time.
In the room. Because that's the question I think I struggle with, a very basic question that I know, okay, I'm trying for Krishna consciousness.
No, Krishna gives us what we deserve and desire. So it's not that everything that we desire, he gives us, but he gives us what we deserve.
I don't want to have that, like, fulfillment of my...
What do you want?
I want to be a devotee, right? And I want to be in devotional
service.
So
you have to practice devotion.
Yeah, so I want, like, you know, so other things which I don't want, I want.
But you do want them. Otherwise, why? Are they, why? At some time, you wanted them.
Yes, I wanted them, but I don't. I want him not to give me that.
Yeah. So, but then again, then you have to think about Krishna. I mean, just become aloof.
Yeah.
So like, what? So practice. Just the idea of that getting fixed. You know, I don't want that. I don't want that. And I don't want that. You're absorbed in thinking about what you don't want. He'll definitely get it.
Yeah, but doesn't I want him to stop giving me that?
Well, then just start chanting Hare Krishna. Don't worry about it.
I know. I'm not, yeah, that's the question I struggle always with. Like,
I remember one devotee, he was always thinking, if I go and distribute books, then something bad will happen to me. So everyone tried to get him out on book distribution for years. He wouldn't go. And one time they forced him to go on book distribution. And he walked up to a person, put out his hand to shake it, and the person took his fist and slammed him into the face and knocked him out. Because he was so intensely thinking about something bad will happen to him. And Krishna actually fulfilled his desire and arranged it so something happened to him.
So what is the distinction that desire was fulfilled?
Yeah, because negative. Just like one person was walking up and down the street in Los Angeles, and shouting out, you're all going to hell, Christian, with these boards on this, you know, you're going to hell, you're going to burn forever. So he's doing it day and night, practically speaking. So the devotees ask Prabhupada, what will be the destination of this man? He's always shouting out, you're all going to hell. So Prabhupada said, he'll go to hell. So that's all he's thinking about. So even we're thinking positively or negative, it's not such a big difference. We're absorbed in the thought, and that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm thinking about my devotional duties. Or
become absorbed in Krishna, and then you'll naturally forget about these things.
So you just keep practicing?
Yeah, practice. And don't worry about it, and actually go away. Do neglect. Yes?
Is it a proper understanding that the desires are coming from the mind, and we're not the mind, so it's more practicing? The mind is suggesting something, and we say no.
Yeah. Well, we don't say yes, we don't say no, we find out what Krishna wants us to do. We judge things according to Krishna's desire, rather than our own personal desire. Anything else?
This question may be related to what she asked you, like, say if I'm at a job and I'm happy with the job, it gives me money and happiness, and I'm happy with what I'm doing, but if I hanker or desire for a higher position, is it a problem? Like, it's a material.
It's a problem for you. It's no problem for me.
Oh, no, is it wrong to think like that?
Because wrong, you'll suffer. Do you want to suffer?
No.
Then what good is it? To hanker for something? Just cause
suffering. I'm already happy doing what I'm doing, but this you
want to put a little poison in it. A little variety. You're happy doing what you're doing, so you decided to put in a little anxiety, some hankering.
Now, in terms of material benefits, it can get me to a higher position, but I'm also afraid that...
There's no material benefit. You may get some more money.
Say if I'm just a clerk now and I want to become a manager of the whole office. Or
something. Oh, so you can be full of anxiety. Now you're just worrying about yourself, and if you become a manager, you can worry about
but
everyone else.
But if I spend those additional profits or something in Krishna's...
that will make us happy. It may not make you happy. One should say, if you're thinking about Krishna 24 hours a day, no problem. Other than that, if you want to hanker for something, hanker for Krishna consciousness. Better... you know, to become a pure devotee at your work as a clerk and become, you know, completely distraught person who's trying to become a devotee as a manager at your work.
Yeah. But like the other day he said, if I get $1 million lottery and I will build a big temple.
I heard that one before. It actually happened in Australia, in Sydney. Some devotee, he bet on a lottery, he bought this ticket, and he won $1.5 million. He said, if I win, Krishna, I'm going to give you half of it. I mean, it's his true story. He won it. He's going to give the devotees $1.5 million. They're looking around for all this land and everything like that. And then finally he decided to give it. And then like by the time he was supposed to give it, he decided that he wasn't going to give it. His brother told him, no, don't give it. You know, Hare Krishna is, you know. So that's just an old story.
But is that,
if you have 15 cents, throw it into the box.
But the thought, I'm thinking about the thought that generates that. But this is gambling.
Gambling, so that's what it is. It's similar, gambling.
Yeah, it's similar situations arise when we think that, you know, that something will come good out of it, but that deed itself is not good.
Yeah, just like that person who went to the bet on the horses, and he went to this deity and said, my dear deity, I'm going to bet on this horse, and if it wins, I'm going to give you half. So he bet on the horse, and the horse came in second. So he only made half as much money. So he went back to the deity and said, my dear deity, thank you very much. He said, you already took your share, I got mine. So better do something practical for Krishna right now rather than blank check in the future.
Still
that person who went to the deity and then said, my dear deity, if you give me this benediction, I'm going to give you this so much money. The deity gave him some benediction. Came back to ask for another benediction the next week. The deity said, well, what about the money you said? He said, well, I don't have so much money. So the deity said, all right, well, give me a couple of goats. It was Durga Devi. So they said, no, okay, well, please give me this new benediction. So the deity said, all right, no problem. And he came back a couple of weeks later and asked for another benediction. So the deity said, well, where are my goats? He said, well, you know, goats are very expensive and hard to find good goats nowadays. So the deity said, well, all right, well, at least give me a couple of flies. He said, flies, no problem. He said, there's so many flies around here. Why don't you just catch a couple? So our attitude towards worshiping Krishna has to be proper. Otherwise, he may give us so many benedictions, but if our attitude is not proper, then we won't really get any, the real benediction. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande,
Ki Jai.
Yep.